Okay.
And Noel Lemon was such a big name, and he was back and forth, and I kind of enjoyed a relationship with Noel. It was fun. I'd have him on the air a lot.
You know why? You weren't working for Noel Lemon.
Okay.
He could be, and God rest his soul, he could be the biggest charmer. 5 minutes later, he could be tearing your head off. Mm. Working for Noel for the 2 years I did in 78 and 79, I went to Channel 8 in 1980. Chris Lincoln got Tom Goodgame to hire me over there as the third or fourth member of their sports staff over there. We had Becky Dixon, Chris was there, and Carl Larkey. But Noel was totally schizo. He could be, I don't think he was mentally ill or anything like that. That was just his personality. He worked tirelessly to promote soccer in Tulsa. Mm-hmm. I give him that. But I'm telling you, John, it was the biggest nightmare of anybody I've ever worked for. But he taught me a lot about putting together games, events, ticket. I mean, I did everything. He had me doing clinics. I was the broadcaster. I did public relations. I had to write and publish the media guide. I was handling group tickets. You name it. Noel had me doing it because we had a really small staff over there. I mean, in 1978, there were probably five or six of us in the entire front office. We were all expected to do many different things. But, you know, if you were in the local media or you're an advertiser, he flipped the switch. Here comes the charm. I used to sit back in awe and watch him charm the people that were important to that soccer team. And then 10 minutes later, he and I would be up in the booth and he'd be screaming at me about something. And sometimes it was my fault and sometimes it wasn't. You remember Les Boyle over at Getty Oil. They were a big sponsor of the Roughnecks. Well, the first time I met Les was on the phone and you know, the reception says, "Hey, Bob, Les Boyle from Getty is on line one and he's not happy." And I had heard about this guy. Les was from New York, you know, strong personality. And he just started screaming at me on the phone about all the things that Noel had promised him that the Roughnecks were going to do for them as part of their sponsorship. Guess what? That's the first time I had ever heard about any of those things. And so I said, "Yes, Mr. Boyle, let me look into all of this." I wrote down a list. I marched into Noel's office. I said, "Noel, Les Boyle just ripped my head off. I didn't know about any of this stuff." And Noel just looked at me and says, "Carpenter, get it done." That's kind of the way. You know, I was Carpenter for 2 years. And so he and I had kind of a love-hate relationship. And then Tom Keeter was the owner. You know, Tom, I know Tom and Noel got into it a couple of times. But Noel could be hard to get along with. Right. And quick story. I think it was maybe 1980, the first game. Yeah, because I was still working there. And we were playing our opener in Seattle. We had a new coach. His name was Alan Hinton, who had been a soccer hero over in England. He was on the Manchester United team and was one of the guys that survived the big plane crash over there that killed part of that team. And Alan Hinton was our new head coach. And it's the morning we're leaving for Seattle for the first game. The game's the next night. And I'm in the office waiting for Alan because he and I are going to the airport to meet the team. Raised voices through the wall next to me. He and Noel are just going at it like crazy. And I'm like, this guy hasn't even coached a game yet. And he and the GM hate each other. Oh, you should have heard it, John. It was all of a sudden the door flies open. He slams the door. "Come on, Bob, let's go." Off to the airport we went. And then that was Noel. And then we go up to Seattle and we win the game in overtime. And Noel and Alan are hugging after the game. They're on the field hugging each other and everything. And I'm like, this is the craziest thing I've ever gotten myself to be a part of.
Right. And we should bring in the name Ron Blue of KRMG.
Your GM, yeah.
He was right in the middle of all that and had interaction with all the people. Ron was very perceptive of sports and all, and I enjoyed him. He hired me, of course. So that was a good time. It was really a lot of fun.
And you guys were carrying ORU basketball.
Right.
At that time, and ORU was really a big deal, and Jerry Vaughn was the play-by-play guy.
Right. And Getty Oil about ran our radio station, too, and Les Boyle, as a matter of fact. All right. So you're at KTUL for 80, 81, 82?
80 to 82, roughly 2 years.
You were a sports director there, were you?
No, they hired me. Chris was still there, Chris Lincoln. And so Tom Goodgame, who I think was the greatest GM of any TV station in the history of this market. He worked for Jimmy Lake, who could be crazy himself. Jimmy Lake was a a more subdued version of Noel Lemon running KTUL and KATV over in Little Rock from his office down in Muskogee. Tom Goodgame brought me aboard. Tom saw my work with the Rednecks, saw that Chris and I really worked well together. Carl Arkey, another St. Louis guy, who I'd never met until Carl got to Tulsa. He was the number two guy, and he was the weekend sports anchor. They basically brought me in as the number three guy to be a reporter. And they said, you know, you'll get a chance to anchor some newscasts eventually, which I did. And then they brought in Becky Dixon to do some features on women's sports and some high school stuff. That was unheard of for any station in this part of the country to have more than two sports people. And we had four. Plus, we had a full-time photographer, Glenn McReynolds, really talented guy, who was kind of Chris's right-hand guy, and Glenn went everywhere with us. He might be with Chris over at TU. Then he'd get a call on the highway patrol little thing we had in the car, you know, checking in here. And he might meet me at Skelly Stadium to do a Roughneck story. Then he might go meet Carl to do a game at to do a report over at OSU in Stillwater. So Tom Goodgame really put together a powerhouse sports department there at Channel 8.
Okay, so then why did you get fired by Channel 8?
Well, a year after I got there, Chris left Channel 8 with Jim Wilburn and Keith Bretz, two of the sales guys at Channel 8, and they formed a company called Winner Communications, which eventually became Wintercom. They had done a lot of horse racing. Channel 8 was carrying quarter horse races and all that stuff. They left, and I think by that time, Tom Goodgame had left and ended up at KDKA in Pittsburgh. Huge you know, station. Carl had left by then to go to KPRC in Houston, got a good job down there. So he and his wife, another Debbie, Chris, Carl, and I were all married to Debbies, and we were all from Missouri. So, you know, how does that happen? Chris leaves. Channel 8 promoted me to news director. I lasted less than a year because as soon as Chris wasn't around anymore to kind of smooth things over for everybody with Mr. Lake down in Muskogee, Jimmy Lake, I got called on the carpet down there a couple of times. His idea of sports was fishing, hunting, camping, boating, recreational. That was his idea of sports in Northeast Oklahoma. And I tried my damnedest, John, to cover all those things, give them their due, but you still have OU football, you have OSU, TU, ORU, and to make a long story short, he fired me because I wasn't doing enough fishing and outdoor activities. And I was running rings around Bill Teagans over at Channel 6 and Al Jerkins and Jerry Weber over at Channel 2. Not that I was running rings around them as a sports guy. I was running rings around them as far as covering fishing and hunting and all that stuff. They didn't, you know, they didn't have to bother with that stuff. And I did. It was driving me crazy. And to be honest, John, I was devastated. I had, from the day I came to Tulsa, I wanted that sport director's job at Channel 8 whenever Chris decided he didn't want to be there anymore. And I got it. And I only lasted about 9 months in that job, maybe 10. And I got fired from that job. Within 2 days of me losing that job, ESPN called me, flew me to Bristol, Connecticut, and put me in the studio with Bob Lee for the 1982 World Cup. The games were coming over from Spain, and Bob Lee and I did the games. He was play-by-play. I was the analyst. Within a couple weeks after that, Carl Smith called me from KRAV. KRAV, 96.5 FM. They put me on the air with morning and afternoon sports reports. And then that fall, George Stewart, who had been my sports director at Channel 8, he ends up over at Tulsa Cable with Mark Savage, who is running that show over at 43rd and Sheridan. They called me and said, hey, we're going to start doing TU basketball games, ORU. We're going to get whatever we can get our hands on from OSU and OU. And they said, we want you to be our play-by-play guy. We're going to pay you $250 a game. You can do as many games as you want. But this is what we're going to do. Nobody else in local cable in the country is doing this right now. What do you think? I said, where do I sign? And I did that for the next 2 or 3 years for Tulsa Cable before I started getting some other breaks and ended up with the Cardinals.
Okay, you've thrown me. You said ESPN called you. So I thought maybe that was a full-time job, but it wasn't.
It wasn't. I had done a few soccer games for them. ESPN was not on the air when I got out of college. I got out in 75. ESPN wasn't born until 1979. And again, Getty Oil. Getty and Anheuser-Busch, they put a lot of corporate money into the establishment of ESPN. So I had done some games for them here and there. And I got a call. My wife happened to be home. And this forceful lady from Bristol, Connecticut, named Ellen Beckwith called. She said, I'm trying to get a hold of your husband. You tell him he better get an answering machine. I didn't have an answering machine. I never needed one. And Debbie said, okay, give me your... So I called Ellen Beckwith back. I got my answering machine. And she hired me for a couple of games here and there. And she asked me to come up for a week and a half to Bristol. And with Bob Lee in the studio, I did the World Cup. And then that led to some other things with them later. And Ellen Beckwith, this weekend, Debbie and I are going back to D.C. for the first time since I retired from the Nationals. And the last time I was there in October, I received an award from the National Press Club as a so-called broadcast legend, you know, which I take tongue-in-cheek, but that's what it says on the coffee cup. Ellen Beckwith was at that dinner with me, and Mike Vetter, one of my producers at ESPN, a friendship that started in 1982. Turns out later she would live in Washington, D.C., and became a huge National fan, and her boy Bob, who she hired 40-some years before that to do some soccer games, was the voice of the baseball team up
there. That's right.
So that's odd. That whole thing happened with ESPN.
Right. So your sports director at KRAV, and play-by-play for sports on cable, like you said. But I have here, in 1984 and 85, St. Louis Cardinals TV play-by-play. So how does that work out when you're at KRAV?
Soccer opened those doors for me. KRAV was willing to let me phone in my sports reports from around the country, wherever I was, because, you know, when Carl Smith, one of the great broadcast executives in the history of Oklahoma, he's in the OAB Hall of Fame and all that, unbelievable guy. To work for him and Tom Goodgame and Sadie Adwan at Channel 8, just people who are legendary in Oklahoma. But anyway, I told Carl, I said, Carl, Tulsa Cable's, they want me to do all these games. I'm going to be traveling around. He said, that's fine. He said, we're going to send a little audio unit with you that you can hook up to your hotel phone or whatever. Wherever you are around the country, we'll let you phone in your reports as long as you get them in on time and get them on the air. So I was able to, I was running around like a madman, you know, doing all those things. Well, then in 1983, I got contacted by Anheuser-Busch in St. Louis to do some indoor soccer for the St. Louis Steamers. They were the major indoor soccer league team that was drawing 20,000 people a game to the old St. Louis Arena up there. That got my foot in the door with Anheuser-Busch. And when they signed on a new cable network called Sports Time in 1984, they offered me the Cardinals job. And that's how the Cardinals thing came about. And soccer opened up all those doors for me with ESPN, Anheuser-Busch, and then a couple years later also with USA Network.
I suppose you were unique. Maybe not that many announcers, sports announcers, did soccer, understood soccer,
right.
And because you did, they all heard about you. Was that true?
That's got something to do with it, because I grew up in St. Louis. South St. Louis is it's a series of ethnic neighborhoods. I grew up in the Italian section. Just to the north of us, there was another neighborhood. I don't know why he called it it was called Dogtown. I don't know why they called it that. That was the Irish part of town. That's where their Catholic church was. All these Catholic parishes were different nationalities in different parts of South St. Louis. So we were raised on soccer. I started playing soccer in second grade, third grade, and understood the game. That got me the job with the Roughnecks, because I had done those games in college. The Roughnecks job helped me to get on with ESPN and USA Network. And you're right, there were very few soccer announcers around. And I kid Chris Lincoln about it to this day, because I said, you didn't know crap about soccer until I got a hold of you. And he goes, hey, you were right. But after about 6 or 8 games, Chris started figuring out, you know, Chris is a smart guy, experienced broadcaster, and he figured out what was going on out there. And we became a pretty good, fun broadcast team for the Roughnecks here.